Hello, you're listening to a spoiler-filled film conversation. Hooray!
Hello and welcome. I am Richard. Nice to meet you. Shake you by the hand. With me
Why are you
today,
talking like this?
this is how I always talk. That is the voice of Abby.
Hello.
And this is the voice of Anthony.
Hello, or howdy. What seems more appropriate? Yeehaw.
I doff my 10 gallon hat to you, ma'am.
Do you say 10 cannon hat?
Ten gallon hat.
You can have a 10 cannon hat if you like.
Way. Anyway, Christ, you're right, Abby. I'm not talking properly. Hello, welcome to the podcast. This week we're doing. I was going to say Earth Girls Get the Blues too. That's not right.
No, not even slightly.
Cowgirls are e to get easy. Cowgirls get the blues. Even cowgirls get the blues.
Even cowgirls get the blues.
Oh, don't they just?
It seems like the audience also gets the blues from watching this one.
God. Who's been going around saying cowgirls don't get the blues? Oh, you know, cowgirls are always chipper, aren't they? Cowgirls. Never crying or moaning or moping. I don't know that that's an established thing, is it? Cowgirls getting the blues or not. No one said they're
We wouldn't
blues
know,
free.
Rich. We're not Americans.
I'm not sure Gus Van Sant's ever been to America based on this film.
Oh,
Well, I don't.
yeah.
Based on the performances, I'm not sure anyone was from planet Earth. It was kind of weird. Anyway, before we get to it, can you give the details of Even Cowgirls Get the Blues, please, Abby?
Yes. Even Cowgirls Get the Blues is from 1993. It was written and directed by Gus Van Sant, based on the novel by Tom Robbins. It stars Uma Thurman, Pat Morita, Lorraine Bracco, Keanu Reeves, John Hurt, and Rain Phoenix. It's about a woman with enormous thumbs hitchhiking to New York and then California for reasons I do not understand.
Yeah, it is oddly about that.
I would like to address the elephant in the room
The thumbs in the
first,
room.
and foremost, to get out of the way.
Go on.
Keanu Reeves does, I guess you'd call it, red face in this, and
No,
that is
I
not
don't think you call
okay.
it that. I
Well,
think, is he an
whatever.
Indian, a Native American, or?
Yeah.
Oh, he's not, I thought you meant, when you said he's an Indian to me, and I was like, was he? Because he's
No.
slightly tanned and has, I don't know, he has predominant sideburns. I don't know. I was just like, I didn't pick up that he was an Indian. I thought you meant like Middle Eastern Indian when you said it, and I was
No.
like, was he? And now
No.
you say Native American, I'm like, was he? Because he definitely
Yeah.
wasn't.
Like, he was not in it enough to register for me.
He was just some bloke who had really bad asthma, and then he was gone.
Yeah. It's only because they explicit John Hurt's character, the Countess, explicitly said that he was a full-blooded Indian.
And they cast Keanu Reeves, obviously.
That is not okay, but because he's there for all of 5 seconds, I'm willing to just put it to the side.
I honestly didn't even notice that problem, so I wouldn't say the elephant in the room is a little bit of dubious casting. I would say the elephant in the room was Uma Thurman's main problem is she has giant thumbs, and that also. I'm a freak. It's not, you know, you're not getting on the X-Men with giant thumbs. Fair enough. It's not that weird. It's just odd. It's not a power, but she has the tremendous ability to hitchhike really well, and that's the premise of the film. Oh, girl born with giant thumbs, she'd be good for hitchhiking. Ha ha ha. No, but that is what the plot's about. Like, it's a throwaway joke of the dad mocking her child at her birthday, and then it's literally. The thing she has going for her is she can hitchhike. Because, you know, when I'm driving down the road, I don't think, am I going to pull over for this stranger? Do they look like they'll kill me? Are they smelly looking? Is it safe? Do I have time? My only concern is, well, can I see their thumbs? Yes, I can from very far away. I don't know how thumb size plays into being a good hitchhiker, is what I'm saying.
No, they were magical.
The giant, Not magical. I mean, they were magical in the film.
No, they established that they were magical.
How did she have that power?
She could move anything by virtue of her thumbs. She did it to an asteroid. She did it to a crop duster when she was next to the road. If she used her thumb, any vehicle would stop for her.
Because it's a joke, like.
Yeah.
Because she didn't have, like, an origin story where she finger-fucked a leprechaun or something.
No, she was born that way.
She was born with thumbs that are big and have the power to make turn, make planes, and make any vehicle pull over or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, this is the thing. This is why this is the elephant in the room. Watching the trailer, I didn't notice that she had giant thumbs, and it didn't... I don't remember it coming up. I thought it was just a slightly weird comedy about a woman who hitchhiked and possibly went to a ranch at some point, which is what it's about. But the thumb thing didn't come up as like a giant thumb red flag. I went into it and I watched the first 5 minutes and I went, "What? Sorry, this is a terrible premise. How is this a good idea?"
Giant and it really thumbs. Does. It stops being relevant. Within, like, 10 minutes as well.
Yeah.
Because it's not a problem.
No.
For her.
Which, in fairness, if anyone does have freakily large thumbs, I mean, they were absurd. It was kind of Roxanne level. So, like, the film Roxanne, Steve Martin has a giant nose. And it's not the kind of nose you can have. It's a stupid cartoon nose, and it just kind of is distracting and annoying throughout.
Mm.
The thumbs are distracting and annoying throughout. But like you said, Anthony, it's not really relevant. People can get over it. She's a successful model. Like, there's no real jeopardy. She's not bullied. She just is obsessed with hitchhiking. And I the other thing is, I don't know why that's meant to be funny.
I found it quite funny, personally, watching all the scenes where she's clearly... They haven't given her the reinforced thumbs for close-ups.
Oh, they're a bit
so
wobbly.
She's just kind of like... tentatively holding things or like trying to open things with just her fingers. I had more amusement out of that personally.
Yeah, because they have the when they have the big prosthetic thumbs on, a lot of the time she does have to interact with something. And she, like, if you have a normal giant thumb, not I know what it's like, my thumbs are proportionate, you can use the top of your thumb, but she couldn't use the top of her thumb because it wasn't a real thumb, so she's awkwardly using the base of her thumb, and it's just like, come off it. If you're going to have giant thumbs, use the giant thumbs to open things, not awkwardly get around your disability of your big, oh, whatever. It's so stupid. But anyway, Abby, why did you pick Gus Van Sant's Cowgirls Blues movie?
I wanted to talk about Gus Van Sant. I did not realise that this was a really bad representation of Gus Van Sant.
Oh, you hadn't seen it before?
I hadn't seen it before.
What did you want to do then? Why did why not pick a different one?
Well, just letting the listeners just peek behind the curtain slightly. We put forward three films every week and then we have a vote and one of them gets passed. And this was the one that I hadn't seen. And the other two, like the other one was Drugstore Cowboy and My Own Private Idaho, which would have both been fine.
This happened. Matt Dillon, is it Drugstore Cowboy? And River Phoenix is a narcoleptic prostitute in My Own Private Idaho?
Yes.
I have seen Drugstore Cowboy. Didn't particularly like it or remember it. I haven't watched it years ago and it didn't stick with me. Didn't overly like it. Didn't hate it. And then I watched just to get something else Gus Van Sant had done. I tried to watch My Own Private Idaho. And I was like, oh, weird. There's a narcoleptic male prostitute and Keanu Reeves is in that as well. And he sort of, it got going. And then I was like, oh, actually, it's hints of Shakespeare here and I can't be bothered. So I got 30 minutes. And then I went, oh, I don't have to do this for the podcast. I can't be bothered. So that's where I stand. I've never, those two other things didn't appeal to me that much, so I guess the reason we vote, we were dividing on what to pick, but this came up because I've never seen this, so I think that's why I was willing to give it a try. But why, you hadn't seen this, but there's something about those other two films you like, or what?
Yeah, the other two I like, just, I think Gus Van Sant and I have similarly broken brains. So the just the weird stuff that he did would be the weird stuff that I would do. And I was like, oh, you do weird stuff like me.
What, giant thumbs?
No, not that. In the other two films, I was like, yeah, I do that, I do that, I do that.
He struck a chord with you in some way with those other films. I think he did with other... Like, there are fans of his work that I think, reading up on it, were surprised by this one. Because they were like, oh, you sort of set a tone and a style of directing and a style of movies. And then this one is like, oh, what?
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah. So, you know, it's still an opportunity to talk about his work, you know, in connection to this one.
Mm-hmm.
But you sort of were surprised by it because you hadn't seen it. So it wasn't, I recommend this or I think it's worth chatting about. It was a little like, oh, let's, you know, visit this world. See what it's like.
Yeah.
Anthony, had you seen this or any other Gus Van Sant's?
I have seen others, but I haven't seen the ones that Abby chose to, for the podcast. What have you I seen? Knew Drugs, Goodwill Hunting...
Oh yeah,
He did. He was the guy who did like the remake of Psycho.
Oh my god, why did he make a shot-for-shot remake of Psycho? What a madman! With fucking Vince Vaughn. Oh, what an idiot!
Yep, that's
fucking
him.
Fucking hell! Oh my god.
Finding Forrester. I'm sure there's others.
Are you the? You mentioned Goodwill Hunting. I'm not a fan of that. I think it's patronising and it's a bit annoying to me. I find it irritating. But I get that people love Robin Williams and they like Matt Damon in it. Do you like Goodwill Hunting?
I don't really remember it, if I'm being honest.
Oh, just some bloody janitor does an equation and he couldn't possibly have, but yet he did, and then Robin Williams is like, oh, I want to get you to learn stuff.
Mm. There was, I do remember lots of philosophical talking, which was also present in this film in a weird way.
Yes.
But no, those are the films. I knew Drugstore Cowboy by reputation, and so my own Private Idaho. And then I saw this one, and I didn't know anything about it. No. And from the trailer, it just looked like more of our bag here on the podcast. So that's why I voted for that one over the other two. Because I thought there'd be more...
Oh, there's more to talk
oddness.
About.
Oddness, yes. So that's why I chose this one. I was a little bit confused at first, because in my mind I had mixed up Gus Van Sant and Lars von Trier.
Ah.
So I was... until I found out that out about, like... a day before when I got hold of it.
Right.
I was expecting some really, really odd stuff going on.
Is he that dickhead who made Nymphomaniac
Part
1 and 2? I fucking hate those films. Well, we're not reviewing him, Lars von Trier, but I think he's a cunt. I think his films are like, they're presented as art house, but I think they're like abhorrent. The ones I've seen, I've seen more than that one, but oh my, I really, really hate that film, the two parts. I think it's objectionable, but I don't know, people sometimes go, oh, it's meant to be a bit confrontational or, you know, taboo, and you go, oh, yeah, but no, don't think so. Maybe not. Maybe just don't make horrible films.
Yeah.
They're offensive.
What my first reaction was, oh my god, this is going to be maybe a little bit darkly humorous, but mainly really uncomfortable.
Bad.
Then the day before, I had a little moment of hope of like, oh, it's not Lars von Trier, it's Gus Van Sant, it's a totally different person. And I liked a lot of his other stuff, or at least I knew it, and I was like, yeah, okay, this might be all right.
He's correct in that the film Psycho is good. Like, so why not? Like, oh, I'm just going to remake... I'm going to make one of the greatest thrillers again. but just in colour with shitter actors, because I want to know what it would look like coloured in. I could buy a colouring book, mate. Jesus. Oh, shot for shot the same. What a madman. Sorry. That really colours my opinion on this now. Like, Drugstore Cowboy, I wish I could remember it better, but I just remember going, oh, I don't know. Abby, was Drugstore Cowboy anything in tone like Rumblefish?
No, not really. Like, some of the themes are similar, but the actual style is very different.
It fell in a category and got lumped in, and I've seen it, but no. Like, I don't know. I can't tell you why I didn't enjoy it, per se. But anyway, let's deal with Uma Thurman and her big thumbs in Only Cowgirls Get the... No, Even Cowgirls Get the Blues. Yeah, so a child is born.
Child is born.
A miracle of miracles. She has giant thumbs, and her family give her a bit of a hard time about it in a joshing kind of way. Oh, she'd be good at hitchhiking, guys. She was a boy. But, you know, so she, and her mum's worried that she's not going to, I don't know, get married or something. Why would a man want a woman with giant thumbs who looks like Uma Thurman? Well, at least it's easier to put two paper bags over your hands than your head, isn't it? actually, that's not true. It probably is just as easy, but, you know, socially less awkward. But yeah, they set up this character who's just a little girl with big thumbs. She goes to the fortune teller, which is Roseanne?
Yep.
Who's like, ah, fucking hell! Oh, my, Jesus Christ, or something.
She's gonna be a lesbian!
Yeah, she'll have many men. She'll have some men in her life, but lots of women, because women like a big old thumb up them. Abby, you're the only woman I know. So, big thumbs, is that like something women are like, a lady's like, ooh, a big thumb, I love that.
It's more of a, because it's not something that is in circulation usually. There isn't really consensus about it, but I imagine that one of those things, once you've tried it, it would probably be quite difficult to go back.
Jesus. I mean, it's not so much like paint me like one of your French girls, but hold me like one of your bowling balls. It's disgusting. Disgusting implications. But anyway, the mum's bereft, but luckily we jump to the future and Uma Thurman's all grown up and she's wearing a kind of dirty rodeo onesie, I want to say, like a mustardy, just thrill, like, what were they, like tasseled cowboy outfit.
Hold me like one of your bowling balls. I am slain.
Well, that's what Roxanne. That's what Roseanne was like, you know. She'd be good with the ladies.
I know. Who blame Roseanne? You're the one that said it.
Well. But, you know, anyway, they're just like, she's a dirty, hobo woman. Attractive, but slightly besmirched hitchhiker with a cowboy jumpsuit and, or cowgirl jumpsuit. And a silly hat, like a bucket hat thing, or sort of slightly weird sun hat. I don't know, what would you call it? Just a weird, incongruous green hat that doesn't go with her outfit, as far as I'm concerned. And she's having a good old time pulling over cars and manipulating vehicles with her giant thumbs without touching them. She does it all through the power of her thumb dancing.
Did any of you pick up on it being 1973?
Early? Not for a while.
No.
No.
Not a way in. Like, I mean, obviously it was filmed in the 90s. And it's a book. The book's from the 70s. But I think they can take, like, at someone's gravestone says the year, and you go, oh, right. Christ. Is this? Because it didn't look wrong. It just didn't convey. I didn't get a feeling. It was the 70s.
I think that was one of the things that worked against it, was if you'd have set it up so that we knew that it was based in the 70s, it would have made more sense for these people to be acting like complete psychos.
I think there were some things that felt a bit like some of the taboos in it were more radical in the 70s. Like there's a bit of lesbianism and there's kind of, I don't know if the film has issues and there's themes and topics the film is trying to deal with a little bit. And you feel like, well, by the 90s, this is less shocking and less difficult to digest. There's the, you know, the idea of her getting married successfully isn't as big a deal, and women being lesbian isn't that big a deal in the 90s. It wasn't that big a deal in the 70s, but maybe there was some... The political elements where there's... that when they come up are perhaps more explicable in the 70s. And by the 90s, you're like, what? So if you're thinking, oh, it's the 90s, what's the big problem? Maybe that's one of the factors. I don't know.
Yeah, it could be. Because you're right. Like, it didn't clock on for a good while that it was supposed to be the 70s. And I did just assume it was either like late 80s or like just now.
Yeah.
And everything just seemed off because of that.
Yeah. Well, the whole thing, for me, played out like... oh, it's a bit like a Wes Anderson film, only... it's not directed like that. It's not. They're not enhancing the weird dialogue and strange, quirky characters with his trademark style and approach. It's like someone else has got a script that Wes Anderson could have done, and has really done it no justice. Like it genuinely felt like. Do you know if you Wes Andersoned it up a bit, this might pass for kind of hipster and cool and interesting, but instead, it's like. So why do we care about these people? Like, it was very hard to pay attention to, I found. Like, I just felt myself going, oh, who cares?
Like, a lot of the characters talked in a certain way, which was, like, non-realistic, because, you know, they'd keep going off in, like, philosophical, like, long, weird monologues. And, I don't know, it just took me out of it a bit. Because, it's hard to explain why. Because, you know, it's a quirky film. Some weird stuff's happening. Maybe magic, who knows. So it's not meant to be naturalistic per se. But I was just very aware that it was happening. Very densely written in parts.
And Uma Thurman's character talks, you know, she's got like a southern accent, but talks really slow. And it's like that kind of irritating southern accent that you just go, oh, come on, talk faster or... less like a fucking idiot. No offence, Southern Americans. You not all so bad. But it's just one of those accents that's like sometimes played for comedy. And she is a dimwit. I think she's like... she's not intelligent. And her thumbs are weird. So she's screwed for life. Even though she's happy just hitchhiking around America. It's like a bragging point for her at times. How much of a hitchhiker. And you go, oh my god, have you not been raped, mugged or abused in some way? Like this... it's not... you're an attractive blonde woman hitchhiking. I mean, at least one trucker's got to be inappropriate with you at some point. Haven't you got any harsh tips? She seems very happy to be, like... there's a point where she's in a nice house and she's like, oh, I have to hitchhike a bit every day like a fucking addict or I don't feel right. But yeah, the thing with... everyone talks in that, like, I'm a quirky, far-out kind of person... and I've got something to say, or I'm part of a philosophical, just an element of the film that's trying to say something, but...
it's always trying to say something, but never actually says it.
Just sort of mumbles on rather than clearly get something across.
And there were just moments where I, you know, you zoned out because they're just talking a
empty
monologue.
And yeah.
It happened a couple of times. I think right at the beginning, like Uma Thurman's first big monologue with the guy in the car.
Yeah, she's like eating plastic cheese and talking to him about that.
Yeah, just how, you know, just waxing philosophical about hitchhiking and her way of life. And I zoned out a little bit then. And then there was a scene where, was it Bonanza Jelly Bean? Is that her name?
Oh, God, yeah.
Was talking to her in bed, and she just gives this really long monologue, and I couldn't tell you what the monologue was about because I totally zoned out.
Was that about gopis and Krishna?
No idea.
Oh, there was...
she had. She told this story about gopis, which were like prototypical actual Indian cowgirls, essentially.
Oh, and yeah.
All,
they like fucked a god or something.
Yeah, Krishna came down, split himself into however many that he needed to be, and then made love to them all at night. And I was just like, why are you telling this to a person you just met?
Yeah, the whole film, it's okay. I guess if there is a theme, it's about sexual nature or something. And it comes up a lot. Like, the odd sex scene comes up, and the odd bit of philosophy about sex and relationships or whatever. But it's, I don't know if it's meant to be shocking or funny or what, but it isn't. It's neither. And it's sort
it
of
was
irritating.
Almost interesting in New York. When you had Crispin Glover and all those people.
All the weird, like, hipsters or whatever you want to call them.
And she was weirdly interested in that very sudden three-way that was happening while she was asleep. And with those guys, it was like, oh, you're like this country girl drifter, now you've come to the city and shit's going to get weird. And yeah. It could have been interesting then. But then they just completely throw that out. They send her down to that ranch. That doesn't make any sense. I felt like I was back in The Road to Wellville while they were in that ranch. I was like, what the fuck is going on?
It doesn't. Oh, there's technically reasons for things, but it doesn't. It feels like there is no rhyme and reason. So she hitchhikes to New York because, I mean, this is the, you know, this, even to say sometimes it sounds better than it is, but like she hitchhikes to New York and
she has a friend.
John Hurt is the Countess. Now, I wouldn't say he's a transvestite because he's sort of dressed like a bloke, but he's got lipstick on and makeup. He looks just this old, like rich, rich fashion guy or advertiser or whatever. And
if
he's
anything,
got like.
I would peg him for a vampire.
Well, he's got frilly cuffs and he's sort of. He's just, you know, flamboyant, but badly. If flamboyant was somehow terrible. And like, so he's got like a fruity apartment and he's a camp guy with like a cigarette holder and he's a kind of just a camp stereotype of a man, and he's like got a job for her, which is doing some like a deodorant. It doesn't tell you, like, it just sort of bores you with some information.
You missed a bit.
What?
Like, the first thing he wants to do is to set her up with Julian, Keanu Reeves, Gitch. So she can lose her virginity. He thinks it's about time that she lost her virginity.
How old is she? Is she like in her mid-20s?
I don't think so. Yeah.
I think they say she's 29, or like you're only a year away from 30 or something.
Yeah.
And she's,
they did.
She's so, been hitchhiking around America and hasn't had sex with anyone. Okay.
No.
So it's her magic.
Magic. Putting those thumbs to bad use.
This is exactly how much time this takes. She goes on this date. She looks lovely. She goes on this date. Julian sees her, has a massive asthma attack, collapses. Everyone goes back to their apartment. He's passed out. She's asleep. Some people try to have sex with her. She runs away, says goodbye to the guy on the way out. And then he's gone. Bye-bye.
Bye, Keanu Reeves. Thanks for coughing all over this with sideburns and some tan on your face to make you more Native American or whatever. So, yeah, not to gloss over it, but you think, oh, John Hurt is like this weird transvestite, like, rich person. And you go, oh, this might be interesting. And no, it's not interesting. It's not funny. He just, like, he has a slightly odd apartment, and there's some jokes about, like, he has a fridge full of, like, one particular kind of raspberry ripple fucking drink or something.
No characters get fleshed in. Fleshed out.
Fleshed out.
None of them. Not even her. Well, the main character doesn't even get fleshed out.
We spend all this time with her. Gonna flash back. Well, we see her birthday with her horrible, like, eye hat that she... Anyway, like, we get a childhood flashback, and all it is to go, look, she had a childhood. Like, you know, there's no things that happened to her. It's, she's got big thumbs. Right, on with the show. But, you know, like, he has, like, John Hurt has the potential to be interesting in this, you know, it could be, you know, Shades of Rocky Horror or something. It could be, they could go anywhere with it. And John Hurt's a good actor, but he doesn't do anything. He doesn't fuck it up, but he doesn't do anything with it. Nothing is happening with this part. Mm. It's literally just there to go. So Keanu Reeves for no reason. It's like you're going, oh wait, I think these things that are boring are meant to be jokes. Like, oh, he's met her and coughed and he has an asthma attack. There is a definite joke where they drag Keanu Reeves to this taxi, him and his cohorts and friends or whatever. And we get a sense that, oh, Uma Thurman's a bit of a bumpkin because she's never been in a taxi before. And she's like, well, it seems wrong to me to, like, get in a lift you have to pay for because, you know, I'm fucking great at hitchhiking. And you go, right. And then you go, like, that's definitely a joke. The other things are like, oh, they're meant to be funny, but they're not. But that was a joke there. And you just go, fuck's sake. I mean, yeah, so this is a silly... If it's a silly universe where people are dialed up caricatures and say bizarre, witty things, then maybe put some oomph into it. But just... Oh, it's just irritating. But it is there just to have some weird... Like, the first bit of sex-related stuff is, okay, she's a particularly old virgin for some reason. She's still happy. It's not like she's miserable. Just John Hurt decided... The Countess has decided it's time... Even though they've already had, she's had work for, I don't get it. And then, yeah, like, who's the guy, Crispin Glover, is it? Has that horrible comb over.
Oh, it's disgusting. And he's never taken it for Back to the Future.
He's always so being creepy and weird.
He is, isn't he? Oh, he's like the king of...
But he's a young bloke with a comb over for some reason.
He was a young bloke, I think.
Yeah, so why has he got a comb? I don't know. You got
because
fucking...
they're pastiching the New York set, that's why.
Oh, are they?
That was a satire happening in that room.
Oh, is that what the... Egg Bedley Jr. was all... I can't not call him that. Ed Begley was being a bore, but they called him a bore, so... He was being pretentious, and you go, how dare you call someone out on being pretentious and make fun of them, and when this whole thing is an exercise in pretentiousness.
It was an interesting little collection of people, actually.
So why not stay with them?
Yeah, that's my problem. I wanted her to stay in New York. Apparently, they cut some of the New York stuff so that they could give more time to the stuff in California, and I would have adored it to be the other way around. Keep her in New York with all of those mad bastards. Then fuck California, you don't need it. It didn't make any sense anyway.
Well, it would have gone a bit more like Midnight Cowboy, where, oh, so cowboy, well, hitchhiker, prostitute, pretty similar. Big thumbed Uma Thurman is in a world of, like, the New York elite or weird hipsters and stuff, and she's with the freaks and the kind of kooky people at their, you know, their shindigs and get togethers. So she's like a fish out of water, and she's of interest to them because she's in with giant thumbs. It still wouldn't have worked, but you know, it could have gone a direction there, and it would have made sense to have these characters in it if they featured in the story more. But don't put them in if they're not relevant. Like, I don't know, it was just like, so Crispin Glover gropes up this other fairly normal woman's breast with Uma Thurman to compare, then cracks on with the threesome, but because he has sex with the other woman first in a really, like, obviously, deliberately grotesque, stupid way, she's like, I'll just leave. She gets, like, cold feet. And you're like, well, fair enough. How were you happy with getting your breast felt in the first place?
She was fairly into it at first. And I guess she sort of sobered up a bit or something. I don't know.
Well, she left because no particular reason.
Oh, her thumbs were itching. She needed to go hitchhiking. That's why she left.
Well, that could have been an excuse. I don't know.
This film could have been exactly the same, but she didn't have big thumbs.
Well, yeah. I mean, it could have been a children's movie about, like, a kind of Roald Dahl thing about a little girl who grows up with big thumbs, has horrible aunties that bullies her, and then she saves some bugs with a giant peach, or some Roald Dahlian thing could happen where the giant thumbed person, that's actually their attribute. And do you know what I mean? Like, something happens. You could kind of have... That's the only context where the story is the woman has big thumbs is a children's thing because it's so dumb. Like, anyway.
Later on, when she had surgery.
She had surgery?
She had surgery on the...
On one thumb.
Thumb.
Thumb reduction. Is that a thing?
Why is that better? Why is one thumb better?
Did she, like, get cold feet because she wanted to keep her magic power?
No, she didn't know. She was trying to hitchhike with a normal thumb, and it wasn't working, and she was surprised. She didn't know that she was going to lose her magic power. She just decided to get one thumb done.
And then she still got the other thumb, so she can use it to get a ride.
And I don't know why. Like, that's the whole thing. Is like,
No one shames her.
No one calls her out on having big thumbs, really. No one makes fun of her for it. No one makes her feel inadequate for it. I don't think she feels that way. So why does she get one thumb removed?
Because it's the one that hit the countess. But that's not how that works. It's like, it wasn't your thumb that was the problem. It was the fact that you hit him at all.
Oh, it's a bit like Bill the Butcher in Gangs in New York, where I cut out the eye that looked away. Like, you fucking madman. You looked away. You're crazy. Your eye didn't independently, anyway. Like, so, okay, maybe that was why she felt guilty. I kind of forgot she hit the countess. And then at the end, they have a picture. It was like, oh, look, he's fine, or something. I was like, okay.
Like, there's that whole thing. She managed to hit him so hard that he required a full head bandage and had some temporal lobe damage. She only punched him, for crying out loud.
I did enjoy his reaction to it, though. Very over the top.
Oh, yeah, it was like she hit him, he spun, walked, landed in a chair, bounced back out again, landed on the floor, wiggled about, and continued to ham it up.
Yeah. Okay, fair play. I the thing that irritated me about the time, when she did hit him out of frustration, she asks the doctor if he's going to be a vegetable, and he goes, maybe not, no. And then later on, she's telling someone that he's fine, and that I thought they said he was going to be a vegetable, but he's all right. It's like, no, they didn't. You said is he going to be a vegetable, and they said no. Not like I was really that. I don't know. That irritated me because people who fucking make up their own story, and then fucking that's what you said. Oh, I hate that bit. But I don't know. That just I remembered that bit that annoyed me. But this doesn't happen now. This isn't. We're not. She visits the countess, and this happens. This happens later because after she runs away, the countess, John Hurt, whatever, gives her a job or has a job anyway, and it's just like.
Oh, yeah, it's for an advertising campaign in California where she has to pretend to be a whooping crane.
Whooping.
So, of course, he'd booked a flight for her to go to the set, and she negates having to hitchhike because she's going to... No, of course not. She's going to hitchhike, and we're going to get a shot of a map and a line that she travelled, and it's like, you can't live your life this way. If you've got a job that you're getting paid for, you can't hitchhike your way over to California, for fuck's sake. Like, it doesn't make... Just, they'll arrange a lift, or... Do you know what I mean? Like,
and then we get on her way... We get the montage of completely non-contextualized cowgirls pissing and moaning.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the ranch. It's called the Rubber Rose Ranch for some reason.
Explains why.
Why is it?
Because his greatest, like his most profitable invention was the Rubber Rose douchebag.
Oh.
So he named the ranch after his most profitable.
I think that's lovely. Haha. Oh, they could have called it the Moon Cup Ranch because it's another feminine product equally sounds pleasant initially but then has a disgusting meaning. The Dildo Ranch. Haha. So, okay, there's a ranch but it functions as a ranch. It has cattle and animals or something or wheat or who cares. And then but it's also a kind of resort, a health spa resort thing, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, he said they had cows for tax purposes.
That's a joke, isn't it? That's a joke. We're meant to be laughing, guys, I think.
That, John Hurt's jokes, he delivered them fine.
No, just, he didn't.
No. No, but the problem was that you were already down really low. So when he brought you up slightly, you were still in the negatives. I was...
Bad jokes. He didn't. It didn't make me laugh, so I can't give him any like points for trying. But well, I don't. It's just, you know, it's not that the people in it are god awful. It's just they. Some of them are a little bit bad at acting, and then others. They just. I guess the part means you talk weirdly or behave or say things in a strange way. Like anyway, we got a bunch of cowgirls who all run this ranch, but they're separate. There's like clashing businesses in a way. For some reason. It's like a fucking shelter for lesbian cowgirls who all bunk together and occasionally double bunk together, and it's a bit of a, what are these, these cowgirls are up to it, aren't they, you know? Which, that's fine, I guess. I mean, it's hardly, you know, Brokeback Mountain, is it? But,
not that I wanted this to be a fuckfest particularly. There was a lot of telling, not showing throughout this, where they were like, oh, you go, some of you are bunking up when you're supposed to go and do it in the hayloft. When there wasn't really much of a sense of it, and it wasn't relevant either.
Well,
like, why?
It contains a bunch of lesbianism that isn't exciting, which I find offensive.
It is double points deducted for anything that is explicitly about sex, and they make sex boring.
Yeah. And irritating sometimes.
Yeah, like, you had one job, guys. One.
And it's not raunchy, it's just weird. Like, it's just like, okay, that's fine. It's like, it's almost like, well, okay, there's no big problem. It's a bit odd that there's so many lesbian ranch hands here. I mean, do we... Or maybe they're not, or they're just women together who they're, you know, out of necessity. I don't know, it's... But then there's also... Sorry, go on.
They inferred during that whole Gopi Krishna fuck story. It's just... It's lots and lots of women isolated for prolonged periods of time.
But there's a health spa. There's like guests, yeah. And I mean, maybe
so they get frustrated, and then, you know, confusion and
yeah. I mean, yeah, sure, maybe it's whatever. Like, but that's fine. Who cares? But you know, there's also a health farm where people are visiting and stuff, and they're sort of, I don't know, it's not much to it. It's just sort of a place to stay, and I don't know. There's the odd presentation or. Thing. I don't know, I got really bored. I couldn't concentrate on the details. But there's some conflict between the woman who runs the ranch and, I don't know, there's some fucking thing. There's like, so the photo shoot people are there to do the photo shoot with Uma Thurman. I don't know why they need to be on this particular ranch. They couldn't, I mean, just because he owns it, just hire a fucking close by, like, upstate New York. I don't know, somewhere in New York must have farmland. You know, that's convenient to travel to, and you just, or in a studio, you fake it, like anything. But no, you've got to go to these, because there's cranes on this farm, like the bird, not the Spider-Man helper cranes. Like, so there's cows, but there's some problem with the cows, and the cowgirls are slaughtering them because they're diseased or something. And there's a whole kind of hoo-ha that I didn't care about in that, about that. Did you guys remember what was going on with the cattle?
Yeah, they were having to cull the cattle, and they were going to replace them with goats. But everyone was like, no, you can't kill the cows. And she tried to explain, like, no, they were diseased. He bought subpar cattle, and now they're diseased. But they wouldn't listen, and it was sort of like the one speech that actually explained something. And by then, you couldn't care less.
Yeah. But there's just a bit of bickering and arguing. It's not really focused in any one direction. There's not really a clear villain or anything, but...
I also, just quickly on the subject of animals, hypnotising chickens.
What was that about? Is it Jellybean or one of the other ones?
It was Jellybean.
This is, let's deal with the name.
Hate the name.
It's not funny, is it? It's not funny. Oh, random. Her name's Bonanza Jellybean. And you go, like, who else is that kind of comedy? Does it work with any other comedies where... Again, it's like Wes Anderson has weird names, but not like... It's not the, something about it that's wrong and not funny.
Because they're up there with...
well, some of actual celebrities' names, like Moon Units and stuff. And fucking any of Jamie Oliver's children. People name their kids stupid things. That's fine, but...
Oh, it wasn't Rumblefish, it was the other one. But in Rumblefish they're called, like, Rusty James.
Well, that's not... I always call him Rusty Brown because I forget his name. But in... Like, that's just, Rusty's a name, and James is a surname. those are just names, aren't they? Like, Bonanza is not a name, and Jelly Bean's not a name, unless it's a nickname. Why are we doing, like... But what is funny about that? The fact that it's random. Like, who cares?
Pretty much.
Like, so she has a weird name, but it doesn't matter.
It might be a southern thing. Oh, it was the Outsiders I was thinking of. Pony Boy, Soda Pop, Two Bit.
Yeah, those are irritating names. They are nicknames, though, that little boys would come up with, I suppose. I don't care.
No, they're actual names.
What do you mean?
His name is Pony Boy Curtis.
Soda Pop is one of their names?
His name is Soda Pop Curtis.
Well, okay, so there's another film with stupid names.
And it's just... I've never understood it as a thing, why people would be even consider naming... Like, Bonanza Jellybean. Bonanza, I could understand as, like, a cowboy nickname. Because it's like, oh, Bonanza was about cowboys, you're a cowboy. Bonanza!
Well, Bonanza's like a big payout, isn't it? I don't know. But she's just a... She's like kind of the head cowgirl, or the toughest one, or the spokesperson or something. There's a lot of cowgirls of differing types. There's like a chunky Native American one. There's a Russian one. And then there's all the others.
I want to give everyone a tiny bit of slack, but Rain Phoenix in particular, who... Because at some point in the production, her brother River Phoenix died. And that will fuck you up. So depending on where that happened within the schedule, may have thrown her and other people for a loop. But I am only willing to give so much slack for that.
Yeah, I mean, she didn't write the piece either, so...
Mm.
But as a group, who can care? They argue a bunch, a little bit, and they talk to each other a little bit, but fundamentally, there's nothing going on. They just seem to be smelly lesbians. Like, there's the joke. When they come to overthrowing the health spa ranch thing, they pull their knickers down and unveil their smelly vaginas and walk towards the cultured guests and... have smelly vaginas at them.
I've never been so unhappy to see vaginas in my life.
I mean, it's just awful crap crassness for the sake of shock. But not, it's just sort of, isn't
That's
it?
More just sort of like, there was no jokes have a structure. And political statements have a structure. You can't just drop trow and have it mean something without context.
Yeah, you can have even the cowgirls having a kind of political stance, like kind of hippies who don't want to conform to society in some way, and have them be slightly smelly lesbian cowgirls, and okay. But it's also it's a joke, because they smell their vaginas, specifically their vaginas smell, and you go... Are we rooting for them here? I don't know. It's just, why did they do that? But, you know, they...
Did anyone spot Edward James Olmos in the band?
No, I saw his credit, like, at the end. And I'm like,
He was in the band.
I remember the band, but I only remember, like, the woman singing.
He looked confused and a little bit sad. Which is understandable.
It was a bit odd. At some point, the Countess turns up. I mean, Uma Thurman's been cracking on with her photo shoot where she is dressed up like a crane. And they're, I guess, filming the advert or photo shoot or whatever. With the cranes, the special cranes that are there, that they're like a protected species or rare. It's odd that they, you know, choose to use this habitat or something. They're a rare species of crane in a blah blah blah, who cares? But they're like the backdrop and she's there. And what annoyed me a little bit about the crane footage, even at the end where they show the cranes flying overhead and people are looking at them, they've just got stock nature footage. There's never really any shots of cranes in shot with any humans at any point. But like this whole I can't remember why. Like, Uma Thurman, I get that Uma Thurman hooks up with Jellybean because she's a speaking character. And like, she's half dressed up as a crane, half in a like cowboy dungaree. No, well, she just she's dressed as a crane, and Jellybean looks like a cowgirl, and they chat, and then they kiss in the wilderness somewhere, and hook up, and I guess become girlfriend and girlfriend, and then when all of the cowgirls overthrow the health spa ranch thing, why do they do that again? Like, I couldn't follow anything.
I don't know, but you missed out the part, because we haven't even mentioned the chink.
Oh dear, that's not Abby being racist. The character is called that.
The Japanese-American character who is being called the chink.
He also is
Do you sleep him for no apparent reason?
Well, who is the actor? He's in other stuff, right?
Pat Morita.
Yeah.
From Karate Kid, most famously.
He's the guy I always think is in stuff, but it's the other guy. I could have finally guessed correctly that it's the dude from Karate Kid, but I didn't. But yeah, he is a cave-dwelling... He feels like he's meant to be a Native American character, but he's not. He's this mysterious, Chinese guy who writes messages on rocks in his cave and lives a little decorated cave thing. And he meets Irma Thurman runs away, see? That's the thing. They overthrow the ranch. All the cowgirls lift up their skirts, pull down their pants and see off the people. And then they run amok in the ranch and they take it over by smashing it up and scaring people away.
Mm.
But it felt like at one point the countess who's there at that point, she gives them permission to take over as well. I don't understand what happened.
These signs up. That's the thing. They're aggressively trying to take over this ranch. It doesn't belong to them. Eventually they cave and they let it have it. But at no point is it really established why any of this is a problem.
Something to do with the cowgirls wanting to feed the cranes better produce to keep them there, and that's working, or they're trying to increase the crane population, or...
And it all sounded nice and dandy and started until they started giving the cranes fucking peyotes.
But I didn't really understand any of it, but the upshot was they took over the ranch, and then Uma Thurman, instead of joining them with her girlfriend or whatever, she runs away.
Yes.
And then she meets the chink.
Yes.
And they just sort of hang out. He dances to music and then not to music and charms her, and they just sleep together, cut to the morning, and she goes away again. I don't remember it going anywhere, do you?
No.
Because she avoided a threesome with a, you know, weird looking dude and a woman. But so she's a lesbian and she's discovered that, and the psychic was right. Her big thumbs are going to please women or something. But then no, also this old Chinese man who lives in the wilderness, she's going to sleep with him. And just nothing goes anywhere, does it? It's just like, it's so hard to remember it because A, you're not paying attention because it's so boring, and B, I don't think it makes sense at the best of times, and it doesn't deserve like rewatching and picking over to make sure you understand everything.
Yeah.
Did you remember anything happening with the cowgirls other than the like Russian woman goes into the marsh at some point and has a moment? What was that? Does anyone remember?
She's meant to be having a series of visions, which we don't see. They just get told about, and they just... I'm starting to get upset.
You picked this film.
I know, I'm so unhappy.
Is it better than, you know, Narcoleptic Hustler in My Own Private Idaho? Or is that like...
I liked My Own Private Idaho. It had a weird middle bit where they were all talking Shakespearean, but the beginning and the end were quite good.
Oh. Well, the beginning and the end and the middle of this are fucking baffling and dull. So,
yeah. What
happens? Like, the cowgirls, they philosophize out loud occasionally, they argue occasionally. The people, like, at some point, there's the sheriffs and the police and the... Like, there's a whole, like, I don't know, the fucking FBI are there. There's a whole guns blazing, like... It's a bit like when, like, a cult is on a ranch and the... It all the CIA or the FBI or like, the army swarm a place and they're going to kill them because they're taking cranes hostage or Like they I don't know, this media interest, but they're all like, there's guns surrounding the place, and at some point Jellybean decides they're gonna give back the ranch because, help me, what they've been feeding the cranes, they just want to look after the cranes, and
we can't help you.
I
stopped taking
notes. You watched
notes.
It too. You watched it recently.
My notes got more and more confused, and then they just stopped after a certain point.
They realised their weird takeover is futile and give back. They decide they're going to give back the ranch. And so Jellybean is, well, I'm in charge. I'll do the burden of going to the police line and telling them, you can have it back. Like, I don't know why we took over. And then she goes, oh, I should take my guns off so that they don't think I'm going to shoot. And she does it at the point where she's within shooting range. So some twat's like, oh, she's pulling her gun out. Shoot the fuck out of her. And then everyone, of course, murders this woman mercilessly because, lol, comedy. So she's absolutely murdered. Then there's actually, because she gets shot, there's a shootout where hardly anyone else dies. So everyone shoots each other until they stop. I don't know if Uma Thurman does something or... They all just go fucking hell.
I think it's because their gunfire disturbs the cranes, which sends them migrating.
That's right, Anthony. I'm glad you mentioned it, because it's so symbolic and important, isn't it? The American...
Also, the chink falls down a hill.
Oh, of course. And you see, the American excess and violence has scared off nature's symbolic bird of freedom and... Yeah, you know, the birds have been scared off now, so they, even though they were going to stay and... I mean, just because they flew off, though, doesn't mean they won't come back. But anyway, they fly off overhead and everyone stares at them, leaving the poor woman to bleed out and die. Because, oh, birds in the air. The birds are flying. Look at the birds. Oh. And everyone stops killing each other because the birds are flying. That's right. And then Uma Thurman inherits the ranch and lives happily ever after, knowing that she hasn't killed or turned him into the she hasn't punched out the Countess in turning him into a vegetable. And the chink comes and like chats with her and, I don't know, bury Jellybean. And, I mean, what happens? Seriously? Like... There's nothing of importance goes on at any point. So what happened in this film?
Nope.
Like, she ends up running the ranch, though, just as a ranch, is it?
Yeah.
How does she inherit it? Does the Countess give it to her? Like, what? How does it default to her? She's not even...
No, she doesn't own it. She was hired. She's been salaried to...
Oh, right. Sorry we murdered your girlfriend. Please enjoy this job. Have as like, the other thing that annoyed me about her character was someone gives her breakfast in bed, but they've got her favourite, road food, which sounds a bit like you've cooked roadkill, but it's apparently just cheap shit burgers you'd buy in like a service station or on the American highway.
Which transforms into like a bowl of cut-up watermelon about 20 seconds later.
Why? I thought she made a joke about, or at least it's not like a melon, like, you know.
Not grapefruit and whatever it was.
Yeah, and then she is eating melons, which isn't road food, is it?
That's a fine old dude.
Well, occasionally, you know, watermelon merchants sell fruit at the roadside in America. I've seen that in films. Usually for cars to drive into, but I think that is a thing. So I guess watermelons are road food. What was that about? They barely make she's barely a character. Just to say she has a penchant for eating roadside, like, road-based restaurant food, is kind of like, okay, what? And how does anyone know what her preference is? Like, I don't really get it.
Welcome to the club.
Yeah, like, just...
The amount of stuff I don't get is monumental.
It's baffling, isn't it? Like, you guys got notes, Abby? You got notes. What do your notes say? What have we glossed over here?
Oh, let's have a look. Can I actually that might be more helpful if I do this thing, compared to other Gus Van Sant tropes.
Okay.
Like, he uses narration in Drugstore and Idaho. And in that, it's by the protagonist. So it's more meaningful. It makes sense. In this, it's by the actual author of the book.
Oh.
And while it is, like, linguistically pleasant, it feels completely out of touch with everything else.
Yeah.
Got a thing about roads. There's Gus Van Sant.
I get that. And if you come, you know, if you have a notion of America and it's vast, stretching wilderness with just a road running through it, I can see that kind of Americana, the big roads, the endless deserts. I can understand the kind of wilderness kind of themes. I can see the appeal of that wide open range with roads running through them, the idea being interesting. You can use that. Hitchhiking's not a terrible concept for a movie. You know, having a ranch issue could be a thing.
He loves a rolling sky. We had that.
Fair enough. Yeah, we, you know.
And then my next one is he likes eccentric's the wrong word, but like it's drug addicts and drugstore cowboys.
Down and outs, like.
Down and outs are just people who are out of the mainstream. So the idea of a hitchhiker fits right in. But the way that it's done, it's almost none of it is actually about hitchhiking. She goes somewhere, stays there, does something crap. Goes somewhere, stays there, does something crap.
Yeah, considering the amount of importance they put on it at the beginning about all the hitchhiking and her free spirit, like, it doesn't really abide to that thematically.
No.
After a while.
Because they get stuck at the ranch and it's more about lesbianism a bit. And also the New York stuff, which is, you know, it's not like a road movie. Say something like Easy Rider understands what a road trip is like, what meeting people along the way is like. You have ups, downs, trials and tribulations, and you meet crazy people and normal people, and Two Lane Blacktop, is that what it's called? I think that's like a race movie, road movie, and that's got hitchhiking in, and I found it a little bit dull. It's super dull because it's boring people hardly saying anything and racing across the country. But it captures an atmosphere of hitchhiking where you never quite know what weird people you're going to meet. Your interactions are different, you're treated differently in different zones, and, you know, it understands the notion of the hitchhiking concept because it features them. It features a hitchhiking girl. It features people just travelling the country for the sake of it. And so, like, films like this, like Easy Rider and Two Lane Blacktop and other road movies get this idea that, like, America's, like, a vast place where you can live. You meet people who are strange because they live in desolate places and aren't in the middle of nowhere. So this film could have fun with that and the contrast between people who live that way and people who are city folk or something. And it can, you know, it can have these highfalutin concepts about feminism or animal rights. I don't know, but it just sort of fucks around doing nothing, which is, you know, sort of like hitchhiking.
Yeah, and I think I kind of get what it was trying to do. If you think about hitchhiking, how you're constantly traveling, you're in one place for a very short time, and then you move on to the next. I think it was trying to capture that as a plot, if you will. But then just even the best, like, you know, kind of road movie has to have, like, an end and a message, a cohesive message at the end. But this just doesn't. Which you could argue is supposed to be the point, because it's all about, like, free movement and hitchhiking, and that doesn't come to such a, like, contrite end. But yeah, as art, like, as a story with a plot, it just doesn't work.
Yeah, it's like, oh, the cranes have flown away and innocent people have been killed or semi-innocent. And like, oh no, aggression has sort of ruined things again and freedom has been cut short. And I don't know, like, it doesn't really make up its mind if it's being funny or saying something. And so you're like, okay, this is weirdly sad. Yeah. And yet there's some optimism at the end. It's kind of just like, and so, you know, it's not like Uma Thurman then cries or is bereft. It's not like they've heavily invested in each other. And it's not like a, like, I don't know, like something like Of Mice and Men, where you get a bit of tragedy and it's like, oh man, it's heartbreaking. We got to the end of the story and this happened or that happened. And, you know, it's not that bittersweet. It's just a thing that happens. Go, oh, that's a bit sad, isn't it? But who gave a fuck about any of these people at the end of the day? So, and the movie kind of glosses over it as well. It's like, oh well, she's dead. Fuck it.
He also lost a lot of his stylistic flair that would have helped some stuff. Like in Drugstore Cowboy, he uses overlaid imagery during the drug heist to express the drug high.
Yeah.
And there's also this thing, this superstitious thing about hats, where that gets a hat one. And in...
What do you mean the hat thing? What?
There's a hat on a bed that is the beginning of the end in Drugstore Cowboy. So then you get an overlay of many, many hats coming down. And
he
in
did,
my
they own... were or they were overlays used at tied in this film,
but they weren't as like they didn't stand out to me as much as the ones like in My Own Private Idaho. He did a whole rack of gay magazines, but the middle four or six of them
all interact with each other, don't they?
Yeah, they all interact with each other, and two of them are the protagonists talking to each other. But in this, like, he might have done it, but I can't say if he did anything interesting. He didn't do anything that actually helped anything.
Yeah, like, it's not like Uma Thurman talks to... she envisions the cranes talking to each other in the voices of characters she's met, or, I don't know, maybe she's in, like, a fucking gas station and some of the road food starts talking, like, two burgers talking. And, like, do it... Like, I like the idea that you'd be playful and convey your message in a stylistic or out there kind of way. And I will say, I did see that bit of the magazine rack in My Own Idaho, and I thought that was a more interesting idea, the sort of the models calling each other hypocrites and things and discussing things that the characters might have thought. And I was like, oh, this is weird. Well, you know, you're kind of trying to unpick it and you kind of find it amusing and wry. And in this, it was just like, oh, what did we have? There was no real directorial flair to it. It wasn't absolutely bereft of interesting shots, but for the most part, it was just like nothing. We didn't meet anyone long enough to invest in them. And even if it was just a kind of navel-gazing look at American culture, it didn't show it in a dynamic way. So I really don't know how to give a shit about this film.
No. All the stuff he did really well before, like monologues, he's used monologues before. They worked really well before. They did not work in this. I don't know what went wrong.
It can't be just delivery. I think it's just, I don't know, I don't want to speculate about the book, but there's no way there's a worse version of this. So the book must have been more, I don't know, deeper in some way. Maybe you can convey more in words than you can on screen. I don't know. But... Anything else in your notes, Abby?
Extreme close-ups, but that's just a detail. He likes them.
He likes them.
He does subjective point of view every now and again, and I don't remember any of it in this either.
There was the bit where she was, like, lying by the side of the road and, like, undoes her clothes and starts wanking off.
Who masturbates at the side of the road? Who does that?
Dirty psychopath hitchhikers. The kind of filthy hitchhiker you wouldn't pick up, innit?
Yeah.
Dirty hobo.
So that had a bit of close-up and subjective camera work. So.
And more sex used as not a joke or tantalising. Just sort of uncomfortable and awful.
And then, I do have one more thing. Like, Drugstore Cowboy and My Own Private Idaho both looked lived in and sort of a bit grubby and a bit torn.
Sure.
But this, despite all of them having, like, really... Like, all the cowgirls, really physical work. They're going to be dirty. They don't really care about their... Like, they'll wear a ripped pair of jeans because they don't need to look nice.
Yeah.
But I don't think any of them looked dirty. Or... Like, they'd done a day of work in their life, if I'm perfectly honest.
They didn't really look like they had smelly vaginas. They just looked like women with their various ranch hand clothes on.
Like, the guys from New York looked like they've been living fast in New York.
Yeah, they look kind of fucked up and,
Chris Benova looked, you just do coke when you feel like it and then have really weird sex with this woman. Probably a bit... Often.
They were a little bit grubbier in New York, weren't they? Or weirder looking, like a little more strange with their plaid suits and things, or slightly weird sideburns or odd. I don't know, they're a little bit, yeah. And obviously, John Hurt was not he wasn't trying to look like a beautiful countess. He was just a sort of makeup wearing, frilly shirted, androgynous, I don't know, he wasn't even drawn. He just looked like a man with a bit of makeup and weird clothes, and seemed to be thrilled with the fact that, try being a fucking Russian countess who grew up in the south of America, Baptist church, and you go, is it a problem? Mm. What's so special about that? You're a weird person. You're so strange.
You also didn't get any sense of that either. It's like, what about you, says Russian countess? Fucking nothing.
Yeah, I don't know. There wasn't any element of it that felt like a stylistic choice beyond, it's a bit weird, isn't it? And then I was surprised it was not the first film. If it had been his first film, I'd go, fucking hell, how did you get any work after this? But it felt like, there's no way you've made other films before, because it just seemed like to be a lack of competence with how it was put together. Whereas I feel like, even though I didn't like Drugstore Cowboy, I remember it being like you say, now that you mention it, like that just, the characters and the settings all felt like impoverished and down and out and kind of the, gutters of America, the kind of junky corners of the world.
And then when he has his shitbox apartment later on when he's on the methadone instead... There's just lots of like, do you remember Midnight Cowboy, that they had that sort of like, that one ring cooker thing that you used for teapots? Yeah, for them.
Do they have any posters of oranges from Florida?
I don't remember. I'll watch it again.
Dare to dream. So yeah, I don't know what this was, but it didn't even feel like professionals had made it. It was just amateur, dull, unfunny when it was supposed to be. There isn't a good side. The only times it really offended me was doing smelly minge jokes. And that's just poor taste and crass. It's not, like, actually offensive. So it was kind of weird when Uma Thurman was dressed as a crane, but it wasn't, like, a cool kind of...
That should have been so much funnier!
Yeah, I don't know. Let Wes Anderson have a go, maybe. And even then it'll probably fall short. It won't be his best one, will it? So it just, to me, there's no real good points. So thanks, Ab.
I'm so sorry.
If only we'd have known. We could have easily have done a different one.
I'm probably the most disappointed of the three of us, because in 3 days on the trot, I watched Drugstore Cowboy, I watched My Own Private Idaho, and then I watched Even Cowgirls Get the Blues, and I realised I'd made a terrible mistake.
Yeah.
But what was done was done. I was like, okay.
For me, my metaphor is easy. It's a big, fat thumb in the eye. That's what this film was. It was an unpleasant, painful watch. And now my eyes hurt. I just got a big old thumb in the eye from this film. And right back at you, Gus. That was a miserable load of dreck that I could barely stay awake through. So thanks.
Yeah, my thoughts are pretty similar. I don't think it's out and out terrible. I think there were a few quirky moments, but like moments do not make a whole at all. Mm-hmm. So And, like, I really liked the first 5 minutes because, like you said, it really reminded me of a Wes Anderson film. Because you had, like, the guy doing, like, the voiceover of a quirky character in a couple of weird situations at first with her.
The fact that the parents were basically bullying her, I thought was kind of funny.
Hmm. So then at that point, I was getting on board, like, you know, oh, this is going to be like, you know, like a Wes Anderson road movie, somewhere between Easy Rider and Pee-wee's Big Adventure, perhaps.
Oh, that's a place to be.
And maybe if it did keep that initial kind of quirky, fun tone that it had at the beginning, in the first, only like the first 5 minutes, and you know, kind of brought the weird shit together at the end somehow. Maybe. Mm. But, yes, a severed thumb wriggling
in a tray.
Yeah.
Cast off from surgery.
Yes. Not, it can't even get the energy to do a thumbs down. It's just lying there.
It's not even
twitching
long,
and dead.
Not long enough to be a draft excluder. Just utter shit.
Because I liked the other two first, I'm going to say this is like where every now and again something will slip through quality controls. You'll get like an action figure or something where the eyes are printed on the wrong place in the face. Or like it's like just slightly malformed so that it's like it should be like an oval, but it's more of a square. I feel like that's what happened to this. It's a production error in what should be a good toy. Like, all the other toys came out just fine. But this one's fucked.
The clue's in the name. It doesn't sound like a good film. Oh, even cowgirls get the blues. Oh, it doesn't sound funny. It sounds depressing. And it sounds a bit bleak. And then what you get is sort of, like you say, the first minutes, oh, that's kind of weird. This could be a wacky thing. But I mainly heard, oh, she has giant thumbs. There's no way this is a premise for a film.
I don't really understand how it's a premise for a book.
If you're like in an elevator with an executive going, what's your elevator pitch for, you know, this film? What, you want to make a movie? You want the money? What do you want to make it? So this is this girl. She's born with giant thumbs. Right. And that means she's good at hitchhiking because of the big thumbs. I'm like, no. No. What else?
This whole premise is something that Vince McMahon would like. And that upsets me deeply.
I don't think he would, because, I mean, it's weird to speculate what Vince McMahon would like. It doesn't feature enough muscly men. Also, where's the drama? Like, she's got big thumbs, who cares? Like, if she had a massive 10-foot cock, and that was her secret, he'd be like, maybe we could make a horror film with Kane in.
Oh, don't. I can't believe they actually had to talk him from that.
Yeah, see no evil. Vince McMahon wanted Kane to have a massive dick. Like, not a massive in like a, oh, that's quite John Holmesian, but like, you know, freak arms worth of penis. Fun fact. Had to be talked out of it, because apparently you need sense and decency in a horror film these days. So yeah, Abby will be apologising and bidding us all good day.
For the rest of my life, I'm sorry.
No, there's worse crimes than making people bored. And if it was a crime, we'd be guilty. No, I take it back. I just take it back. Okay. Anywho, no one said it was easy being a cowgirl. And that's not much of a sign-off, is it? suits this film. So we're gonna hit the road and hitchhike properly. What is what's a good way to get a car to pull over? Flash your tits, is that effective, or that would scare you off, wouldn't it?
I don't know.
Hold some money out.
I think the classic one is like the sexy lady leg being extended outwards.
Yeah, I don't know. I've not hitchhiked, but I have had a lift back into town once, and I did do the classic just walking down the road with your thumb out and hoping, and then eventually one pulled over. It wasn't that far, so it wasn't that unreasonable. But I can't, you know, you do feel a bit scared, really. It's a weird thing. Anyway, we're going to... I guess what I'm talking about. Just talking about hitchhiking now.
I just want to say one final thing. Like, it's not about hitchhiking, but it's got the spirit that I think this movie was supposed to have. And it's just read On the Road instead.
on the road.
Spend the time reading On the Road by Jack Kerouac, and don't watch this. Ever.
Just anything else. Any other Gus Van Zandt, probably. I'll definitely take Good Will Hunting over this, even though I don't particularly like it.
Yeah, you will take a middling, competent film.
It's got a premise that you don't instantly shoot down, so there is that. Anyway, catch us next time for something, another time, another podcast. Bye for now.
Bye.
Goodbye.
What's that song from Hulk where he walks away?
Da-da-da-da-da.
Now in unison, rather than
he did it quicker than I did. I really need to blow my nose.
Oh, ba 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 ba. I'd give David Banner a lift any day.
You want to make sure he doesn't get angry in your car, though.
He would have not lasted very long in this film. He'd have been pissed off straight away.